recording. And
they're crying, fighting now is her mother. Okay, I just came up with the name for the other mother, wrong mother. Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah. So we're on Parshios Bahar B'chukosai. Ordinarily, what I've been trying to do is really, I guess, narrow the playing field a little bit and almost whittle things down to one parsha. And the truth is, let me grab.
This is still a double parsha.
This is actually a double parsha, all right. So even though this is only it's two parshas, it's still only 1 week, really, and it might be worthwhile having an actual chumash. But these two pieces, at least I find, are particularly connected. Each one certainly stands on its own, but there's a connection that I'd like to draw between these two pieces that we have tonight, one on the front and one on the back of the pages here. So the first piece is a very, very interesting one, really a fascinating one, both because of the actual content, but also because it sets up something of a paradigm that I think is very worthwhile to think about in general when we think about Torah and mitzvos broadly, Avodas Hashem broadly. This is just one of those templates and frameworks that I think is very worth coming back to and thinking about with respect to any number of dimensions of Torah and our Avodas Hashem. So this is at the very, very beginning of Parshas Bahar. If you're unfamiliar, the very beginning of Parshas Bahar, there's a very, very strange thing, and it's one of the better known Rashis on all of Chumash. It's 696 in the Stone Chumash. At the very beginning of Parshas Bahar, the Torah does a very strange thing. Vayidbar Hashem el Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor, and this is what Hashem said to Moshe on Har Sinai, at Har Sinai, saying as follows, Dabar el Bnei Israel, speak to the children of Israel, and you shall say to them, Ki Sava'u el Ha'aretz, when you come to the land, Asher Anino Senachem, that I'm going to give you, or that I give you, Vishav Saha'aretz Shabbos Lashem, the land should rest as a Shabbos, as a Sabbath or a sabbatical. So this is the concept of a sabbatical, which really applies to land, unfortunately not to rabbis. But but the idea is that we let the land lie fallow. This is the whole parsha of Shemitah, Shvius or Shemitah. So what's unusual is not that this is an important area of halacha and therefore needs to be discussed by a whole series of variety of psukim dealing and detailing all the different components of the mitzvah of Shemitah, at least as comprehensive a treatment as we would expect in Torah Shebichsav. That's not unusual. What's unusual is the introduction, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says this to Moshe and has it put in print in the Torah that this happens specifically Bahar Sinai. It happens on Har Sinai. And again, this is one of the better known Rashis in all of Chumash, the very, very first Rashi, which is going to be quoted here in this piece. But Rashi asks, Ma'inin Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai, why is it that this mitzvah, what is so special about this mitzvah, that this mitzvah receives the introduction of, oh, this happened at Har Sinai, all the mitzvahs are given at Har Sinai, why specifically this mitzvah? So Rashi answers that's exactly the point, is that we're trying to set up sort of a model of the kind of things that would have been discussed at Har Sinai, that we know were discussed at Har Sinai. So Rashi really asks, "V'halokol hamitzvos namru miSinai." All the mitzvos were said at Sanhedrin. All the mitzvos were said at Sinai. Elamash shmita namru klaloseh upratoseh v'dikdu kamiSinai. Rather, why is it that we're speaking about this mitzvah is coming from Sinai? Because what we're trying to say is that Shemitah, you know, can be broken down into so many component parts. So it can be subdivided into different halachos. There are broad components and there are more minute components. There's big print and there's fine print, all within Shemitah. And the message that the Torah is trying to convey is that just as that is the case for Shemitah, so too all of the mitzvos were said in the exact same manner at Har Sinai. Af kula ne'emru, all of them were said kloseyen v'dikdu keyen miSinai. All of them were said at Har Sinai. Hey, Vivian, how are you? Both in terms of the broad and also in terms of the more narrow or more minute. They were all actually stated at Har Sinai. And all the various halachas, and we speak about, it's like the number 613 just drips off the tongue. We speak about 613, 613, 613. 613 is an interesting, last time we looked at the Rabbam, the Sefer HaMitzvos. How do you actually arrive at 613? But in reality, there are myriad halachos that we actually keep. Every single mitzvah can be broken down into so many different component parts, and that's exactly Rashi's point. Why Shemitah? Because we're looking for an example of something that can be broken down into component parts that you know that all of the mitzvos, with all of their component parts, all of the other halachos that all fall under the general rubric of the greater mitzvah, they all were said at Har Sinai, all of the various halachos. How settled are you, not to get too personal, how settled are you or satisfied are you with that approach? We're good with it?
That everything was given?
Not that everything was given. I'm not here to test your faith. But why is it, asks Rashi, that the Torah specifically gives an introduction of, Shemitah was said at Har Sinai. Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai. Right, which is has become a modern Hebrew idiom, almost like what's that got to do with the price of tea in China? Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai. Why is it that Shemitah of all mitzvahs do we provide this introduction of Shemitah was set at Har Sinai? And Rashi answers, because we're trying to think of an example of something that has component parts that you understand that all of the mitzvahs, with all their component parts, all of the fine print, were all said at Har Sinai. That's why Shemitah specifically.
Doesn't seem like such a comprehensive mitzvah.
Why so?
There's no Adam L'Chaveiro.
Okay. Interesting. Well, you walked right into it. Got you right where I want you now. Okay. Perfect. Perfect.
Okay. It's going to be Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Now you're going to explain to me why it is Ben Adam L'Chaveiro.
Right. So what I would say. So exactly right. We're going to get there. That's certainly part of it. But what I would say specifically. Fracha Bas Shimon. So just wanted to mention that tonight's shir, Barry's mother, Shari, who's sort of like an amud of the shir, Fracha Bas Shimon Le'ilui Nishmas. So tonight's learning will be Le'ilui Nishmas, Barry's mother, Shari's mother-in-law, Fracha Bas Shimon. So the I would argue that Shemitah, and this is really what we're going to see argued in just a moment, but I would argue that Shemitah is no different, especially than any other mitzvah. And now, maybe it's true that at least at first blush, it doesn't combine all the various components of different mitzvos and sort of like the two halves of the two luchos. And it's Ben Adam L'Malach and Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, and that's exactly what we're going to see explained in this next piece. But I don't know. At first blush, what like tefillin doesn't have component parts. We talk about the mitzvah of tefillin, but you and I know that tefillin have to be made of specific types of material, and then colored with specific types of ink, and then sewn together with specific types of sinews. And there are issues of safras and Shabbos. I mean, Shabbos has all these different applications, and it winds its way into actual daily living, or practical living, I should say, in all different kinds of way. And Pesach, and cleaning for Pesach, and cooking for Pesach, and getting rid of chametz for Pesach. Every mitzvah can be broken down into hundreds and thousands of different halachas. So still, what makes Shemitah so special? This is exactly the question. Many, many, many mefarshim ask this question. I found this particular piece very, very compelling. This comes from one of my favorite Sfarim on Chumash. This is actually like a real double whopper here, because the two sides of this page incorporate two of my absolute favorite Sfarim on Chumash. The first is from L'Toru L'Moadim, which comes from Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, who was a fascinating personality in his own right. He was actually the founder of the Encyclopedia Talmudit. If you've ever seen this enormous encyclopedia, big yellow volumes that usually stick out like a sore thumb in any shul and in any base medrash, that is basically a comprehensive work and treatment of all different major concepts that are discussed all throughout Gemara, all throughout Shas, that are all being codified according to basically a standard sort of encyclopedic kind of format. So Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin was the founder thereof. He was actually a Chabad Chassid, just fascinating, fascinating person. At any rate, he asks this exact same question. You could really jump to the second paragraph, because the first just quotes Rashi and we already saw it. So he says, V'yipleya davar. So it's a wonder. It's shocking. It's a shocking kind of statement that Rashi makes. Halwa she'ela b'mkoma omedes. The question stands in its place. You haven't answered anything. Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai. Still, what's so special about Shemitah? Clearly, the Torah is picking upon Shemitah, saying Shemitah is going to serve as the paradigmatic example of the mitzvos that were said at Har Sinai. And Rashi's explanation is because, you know, Shemitah has all these other smaller halachos associated with it. Every mitzvah has all these other smaller mitzvos or smaller halachos associated with it. Still, why is Shemitah singled out? Halokach efshar shahaya likboa kol mitzvah acheres. Really, we could have established, we could have quoted any other mitzvah with his introduction. Ezo shehi, whatever it may be, shenemar b'sinai, that it was said at Sinai. V'lomar achakarach, and we could have said right afterwards that ma mitzvah plonis namru kol zebra. We could have said the exact same thing, just as this mitzvah was said with all of its broad topics, broad components, narrow components, and that is misinai efkol hamitzvos kach. So too, all the other mitzvos are in the exact same model. They were all said at Har Sinai with all the halachos that are associated with them. V'lamadav k'shmita. Again, why do we single out Shemitah? So aleinu lahavin mitoch kach. So it's upon us to understand in terms of this formulation. Sheyesh b'shmita mashum yuchad. There must be something special about shmita specifically. Hamisamel es kol hamitzos kulam. That clearly shmita does somehow or another in its kloloseha upratoseha v'diktukeha, all the varying halachos associated with it. If we take a look at the full landscape of Shemitah, somehow or another, Shemitah's misamel, it symbolizes all of the other mitzvahs. V'amnam kenhu, indeed that is the case. How so? Hatoro mitzvoseha mechuvanos umyashros eschaye ha'adam b'shlosha kivunim. So Torah and its mitzvos are meant to sort of direct a person and guide a person towards three particular directions, three particular wavelengths. And this is why I say I think this is just in general a very interesting framework to think about when it comes to Torah and Mitzvot in general, Avodas Hashem in general. And we're familiar with two of the three, but the third I think we speak about less often, although it is also important and also worth thinking about. Ben Adam L'Makom, of course, there are those mitzvot that pertain to our relationship with Hashem directly. Bein Adam L'Chavero, and between ourselves and our fellow human beings. Uvein Adam La'atzmo, and between one and oneself. So meaning it's not just how I serve Hashem and how I serve others, but actually what I then become and what I develop into, almost as its own category. Kesha Amru, and this is a fascinating take, and I wish I had remembered this when we actually did this this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos during the first week that we did it. And Rezevin writes, Ashlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Almeid, right? Famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, the world stands on three things, Al HaTorah, Val HaVod, Val Gumilas Chasadim. He says, Baror, it's clear, obvious, Sheniskavnu Ba'avoda, that when we speak about Avoda, it's true. What do we really speak about when it comes to Avoda, at least at first blush and on a superficial level? B'muvan avodas hakarbanos lifnim v'avodas hatfila hayo. What we speak about when we talk about avoda, really typically and classically, is the avoda in the Beis Hamikdash. And if we're not talking about the avoda in the Beis Hamikdash, we're talking about what stands in for the avoda in the Beis Hamikdash bizman hazeh, namely tefila, davening. Havon mikol makom. And nevertheless, b'muvan sheni, really on another plane, nitna avoda lisparesh gam ba'avoda hapshuta, that we could explain avoda as avoda. Avoda is work. Avoda is just work. It's labor. Avodas chol shel adam la'amal yulad. A person is born to toil. A person was brought into the world to work hard. Why is it that now, even with respect to this quote, adam la'amal yulad, this quote of Chazal, we understand also, like on a spiritual level, we're here to toil and to labor in mitzvos and to try to develop. But the way that Rav Zevin is explaining this is that a person should recognize that he's going to have to move, and he's going to have to work, and he's going to have to labor, and that just living a slothful kind of lifestyle just doesn't pass, just doesn't go. Why is that? Because then you become a couch potato, meaning there is something about actually developing into a better person that comes about through work ethic. It's almost like irrespective of having anything to do with spirituality, you could probably all hear our like parents and grandparents sort of like whispering in our ear things about being, you know, motivated, having work ethic, and you know, make something yourself and go and do and be productive. Go be productive. Get outside, go do, like don't just sit and like being active. So we become better people when that's the case. That is the dimension of bin adam la'atzmo, that a person working just to become a better person himself is what we're talking about. Uvchein, and therefore, HaTorah bein adam l'makom. So Torah is, and this I think is an interesting formulation that at the end I hope to have time. I think there's some merit actually in thinking about maybe shifting some of these categories. But here is Rav Zevin's take. HaTorah is bein adam l'makom. Torah is the manner in which we serve Hashem. Ha'avoda bein adam la'atzmo. Actual avoda is how we develop. We're there to work, so we actually become better people ourselves. Ugmilas chasadim, obviously, bein adam lechaver. That's between ourselves and one another. V'chol shlosha hayesodos halalu. Each one of these three foundations, miskadshim umitarim aydei hashmita. Shmita interacts with, shmita sanctifies, shmita purifies every single one of these three dimensions that a person is meant to have within. V'shavsa ha'aretz shabas la'Hashem.
Pasuk says that the earth should just lay fallow, it should lay in sabbatical, a Sabbath, a sabbatical unto Hashem. Lahodiacha, in order to inform you, in order to teach you, to tell you, ki Hashem ha'aretz mlo'a, that the world, the earth, actually belongs to Hashem. It is this great exercise in our direct avoda and amuna in Hashem. Hashem, you run the world. Hashem, the world is yours. Hashem, whatever interaction I have only because you've given me allowance to do so. And when you say that it's time for me to keep my hands off, then so be it. So then I will. So that is dimension number one. That's with regards to our avoda towards Hashem. The very, very basic concept of letting the earth lay fallow means that it's not mine to control and I'm just giving it back up to Hashem. Hashmita machdira umashrisha b'lev ha'adam. So Shmita actually, it creates, it encapsulates in the heart of a person. Ha'akarva ha'argasha ki yeshman higlabira. That there is a master of the house. There's somebody who's in control of the entire planet. V'Hashem, or the entire universe rather. V'Hashem hu Adon Ha'olam. Hashem is the master of the universe, and that is an idea and a hashkafa that becomes inculcated by means of Shemitah. That's dimension number one. It's been Adam Lamakom. V'darshu, and we've also darshened, Shabbos Lashem. L'shem Hashem. That what do we mean, a Shabbos Lashem? It should be a sabbatical year for Hashem, for the sake of Hashem. Kashem Shanamar Bishabbos Bereishis, just as we say with respect to Shabbos Bereishis. Umakasa Bishabbos Bereishis, and what do we write about, or what does the Torah state with regards to Shabbos Bereishis, meaning the Shabbos that we keep, the initial Shabbos of the Sheshes Mibereishis that then we keep every week in, week out. Beini uvein b'nei Yisrael, os hila olam. It's meant to serve as a sign, as an os between myself and the Jewish people. Ki sheshes yomim asa Hashem asa shemayim v'asa aretz. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe. V'kachu b'shmita. So again, Shemitah is the exact same idea, that by letting the earth lay fallow, we are testifying to the fact that ultimately Hashem's in control. Hashem's in charge. It's Hashem's work. And we work, or we partner with Him when He allows us to do so, but otherwise not. Hare ben adam l'makom. All ben adam l'makom. V'shuv sheish shanim tizras adecha v'sheish shanim tizmar karmecha v'asaftos tibuasa. But then what does it also say with respect to Shemitah? It says that you specifically work for 6 weeks, which is 6 years, I'm sorry. Not unlike Shabbos. That when we speak about Shabbos, it's true that you rest on the seventh day, but the implication is also that you're working the other six. So similarly, here, when the Torah talks about letting the earth lay fallow for the seventh year, there is a certain advantage. We're specifically supposed to be invited and so motivated to actually work the land. That is a merit in of itself. It's a value in of itself. The idea is that we are busy with the actual avoda the rest of the six years. Zohi ha'avoda ben adam la'atzmo. And that's what he meant before, Rav Zevin, when he spoke about the idea of avoda, sort of crafting a new person. Lahavdil, although I don't know, it is lahavdil, but you know, there's some value in it. You know, in the world of the early years of secular Zionism, right, having nothing to do with the religious Jew returning to his homeland, but just purely secular Zionism, there was still this idea of creating the new Jew. So what did the new Jew look like? The new Jew wasn't this downtrodden and oppressed shtetl Jew, which unfortunately was often equated with the religious Jew. But the new Jew was sort of, he was proud. He was proud of his handiwork. He was able to create something, to do something, to build something, to craft something. And that's where there was this obsession with working the land, right? And setting up shop with all these sort of kibbutz training sites, even in Eastern Europe, to teach Jews how to farm and how to cultivate the land. There was something about sort of stepping into brand new shoes and stepping into that new personality and rising to the occasion. And indeed, to a great extent, that really worked and developed this whole other psyche and this whole other sense of self in so doing, because of avoda. And afterwards, v'yisos Shabbos l'Hashem l'achem l'ochla, then afterwards it becomes a Shabbos, l'achem l'ochla, l'cha, u'la'avdecha, v'la'amasecha, v'l'schircha, l'soshavecha, l'soshavecha. So all the other people who otherwise wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity to just come onto your land and take it, now what we're saying is that because the land is meant to lay fallow, everybody can come and pick and pluck from whatever it is that might be there, especially all the people who might be in specific need of actually feeding themselves and having some extra food and being able to go about taking it without having to pay. Uvimishpatim, v'ashviyis tishmetenu untashta v'achlu evyonei amecha. The idea is that the land lays fallow, and then all of the paupers of your nation are able to come and are able to take for themselves whatever it is that they want. Klomar, in other words, peiros shviyis heim hefker lakol. The fruits of shviyis become hefker to anybody. Everybody can take them. Anybody can take them. What does that mean? It means that baked into the system is the opportunity for the person who's letting his field lay fallow to actually care for his friend, his neighbor, the person down the street, the person from the other community in the other county who can now come and actually benefit from all these peros that can't be harvested by the Baal Bayis himself. Hare bein Adam l'chaver. It really is a remarkable mitzvah. It's an absolutely remarkable mitzvah. So meaning it gives us this opportunity to sort of develop ourselves. Part and parcel of letting the land lay fallow means having worked it for the previous six. It's part of the same parshan, part of the same process. We develop as people who have work ethic, as people who are motivated, as people who want to do and want to engage and want to improve the entire world around us. It's you know, tikkun olam at its finest. It's not, maybe yes, maybe you know. It's at least what's become the popular version of tikkun olam. But the idea is that we develop ourselves, is number one. Number two is that we obviously develop the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because effectively, he says rest and we say how long. He says that this is my land now, I'm sort of taking it back for the year, and we say fine, okay, so be it. And then we also have this opportunity to perform chesed by basically presenting anybody else who's interested in coming with this tremendous, noble act and gift of tzedakah by allowing anybody to come onto our land and be able to take it. It's an extraordinary mitzvah. And it touches each one of those buckets, each one of those wavelengths. Uladarga hayoser gadola higia hayachas shebein adam lezula so bishmita. And now this is sort of like the coup de grace on the bein adam lechavero, that it's not only bein adam lechavero, it's not only between a person and his actual friend, but it's just between a person and anyone else and anything else that might actually need to benefit from available food. Leave it for all the animals. The animals can waltz onto my field and they can take whatever they want. So meaning it's now available for anyone and everyone. What that would do, today we would go into conniptions over what that does to like the ecosystem, and if the deer are eating the corn, then what are they going to do the next year when they can't have the corn, they can't have the corn. But at any rate, the idea is that effectively I am leaving this food available for anything and anyone. I'm removing myself for the benefit of everyone else around me. It's usher to even prevent animals from eating off of the field if there is a need or if they are interested in so doing. V'lachein shmita mesamelas es kol hamitzvos. Shmita symbolizes all the other mitzvos. Sheratza haTorah lomar shekol hamitzvos nemru b'Sinai. When the Torah wants to say that all of the mitzvos are said at Sinai, specifically that all of the mitzvos and whatever wavelength they fall upon, whether it's ben adam l'chaver or ben adam l'makom or ben adam l'atzmo, in all of those instances, it all comes from our Sinai. Therefore, lakcha ledugmas hashmita v'amra mashmita misinai af kulan misinai. Because shmita really is an extraordinary mitzvah. It's a unique mitzvah. It does touch upon each one of these three different wavelengths. Therefore, serves as a very, very appropriate example of all of the rest of the mitzvos that somehow or another will fall into those three categories as well. Shmita Zevin, I think a beautiful piece. Any thoughts, questions, thoughts, ideas? Rebuttals, interjections.
Well, I mean, today we're only a very small percentage of people actually physically work the land. So at first I was thinking, well, Shemitah still applies to everyone else because how you buy, what you do with it, but it doesn't carry, these other elements of it don't carry through for people who aren't actually working.
Correct. As a practical example, absolutely. I think once we say that this is so chosen because it is a, you know, there are two different dimensions to every mitzvah. There's the mitzvah in practice and there's also the mitzvah in concept. So even if the mitzvah in practice doesn't work for everyone and it works even less, now we actually think about, wow, Shemitah is really happening again. For the longest time, you didn't hear about Shemitah because nobody was observing Shemitah because there was no such thing as a Jewish farmer in Israel. It just didn't happen. Actually, just saw, you know, Shemitah is Dirabanan.
so long as you don't have the majority of the Jewish people living in the land of Israel. I just saw it was a couple of weeks ago, I think it was in advance of Yom HaTzmaut, Times of Israel put out a stat that I think like 43% of world Jewry is living in Israel. So now, between me and you, if the Times of Israel says that 43% of world Jewry is living in Israel, and I don't know if anybody's, you know, keeping score exactly, but it would strike me that we may very well be at a majority already. Because if you know the way that things are unfortunately looking and going in America, the numbers that are often furnished by federations aren't, and Pew studies and, you know, and reports and all those kinds of things that, you know, the Pew Group does, aren't always exactly accurate from a halachic vantage point. And generally the numbers in Israel are, at least much more so, perhaps to a fault, but much, much more so. So anyway, so we may already be at a point where it's even becoming a mitzvah d'oraisa. But at any rate, at least, you know, in concept, I think it's a very interesting idea that the Torah selects this even just conceptually, even if we are not all engaged very, very directly with Shemitah, so that we can actually participate in every one of these three wavelengths as the mitzvah, or as the contours of the mitzvah actually allow for, at least in concept. The idea is that mitzvos are supposed to touch each one of these three wavelengths. Kol HaTorah Kula is meant to leave us as perfected human beings in the areas of Ben Adam L'Chaveru, Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Atzmo. And I think that Ben Adam L'Atzmo, Kat, it's just so interesting. We don't think about it often enough. The idea that we are also meant to develop as people, almost inherently, not only in terms of our service of Hashem, but our developing into beings that are more actually akin to Him. And obviously there's a lot of overlap. Hashem loves it when we're nice to one another, and people, and we tend to be nicer to one another when we're driven by actual religious and spiritual motivation, and by the sense that I'm taking care of Hashem's children, and this is what He also wants for me. And obviously both of those things turn me into an actual better person. So there's a lot of like bleeding from one area into the next, but nevertheless sort of as three different categories. I think it's very, very interesting and a compelling kind of framework to think about. Which, at least in part, and we'll see if I have time, I'd like to almost like take a crack at rearranging them a little bit, but a very, very interesting piece from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. And that's on the flip side. This is from Emes Yaakov, again, one of my all-time favorite Sfarim on Parsha Chumash. Emes Yaakov from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. So Rav Yaakov picks up after, in the next Parsha, in Parsha's Bechukosai, the introduction is, if you will follow my chukos, then good things happen. And that goes on for like a handful of psukim, not very many. That if you keep the Torah and you keep the mitzvahs, then things will basically be good. And then, so help you if you don't. And if you don't, pages and pages and pages and paragraphs of curses that we come to know as the tochacha. Right? This is the rebuke that comes from Hashem if we don't keep His mitzvahs and all the things that are going to take place, all the things that are going to happen. If we jump to Perek Chaf Vav Pasuk Lamed Dalet, what we say and what Hashem says is that as a function of these curses coming upon you and effectively being kicked out of your land, there's no more rainfall and there are marauding bandits and enemies and you get kicked out of the land. You can't work the land anymore. Therefore, finally, I get what's coming to me, Hashem says. I can finally sort of collect on what's actually owed. What does the pasuk say? Az tirtze ha'aretz es shabbososel. Then the land will be appeased by virtue of the shabbosos, by virtue of the sabbaticals, of the shemitos. Kol yimei hashama, all the days of the desolation. You're not there, you're not working. And finally, the land gets to rest as it was supposed to do. Va'atem be'aretzoy ve'chem, you'll be off in the lands of your enemies. Az tishbas aretz, and finally the land will be able to lay fallow, it'll be able to rest. V'hirtzas es shabbososel. And it'll be appeased for all of the shmitos, all of the shabbosos that it missed out upon. And the implication is that this is why the tochacha happens. The tochacha happens that Hashem, or the land, can finally get its shmitah back. The question is, first of all, what is so very important about shmitah? Now maybe we have a taste of what's so very important about shmitah. But moreover, it doesn't seem to exactly jive with the very, very beginning of the parsha. Especially at the very beginning of the parsha, im b'chukosai telechu, if you do go in the way of my chukos, the way of my laws,
Ves mitzvosai tishmaru, and you observe all of my mitzvos, vasisemosam, and you do them. Rashi famously says that what we mean by im b'chukosai telechu, if you go in the ways of my chukos, and then again, all of the good and wonderful blessings are going to come upon you, and there will be peace and bounty and blessing. Rashi says, what does it mean to go in the way of Hashem's chukos? Rashi, in the opening Rashi of Parshas B'chukos, yachol zeh kiyum ha-mitzvos. You would have thought that this is the fulfillment of all the mitzvos. But kishuhu omer ve'es mitzvosai tishmeru. Then afterwards it says, and you also observe my mitzvos. So B'chukosai telechu must be different from mitzvosai tishmeru, because they're two different clauses, two different ideas. Mitzvosai tishmeru means keeping the mitzvos. What is B'chukosai telechu? Harikim ha-mitzvos amur, we've already dealt with kim ha-mitzvos afterwards. Hamani makayim b'chukosai telechu. How do I establish? What do I say b'chukosai telechu is referring to? Shetiyu amalim b'torah, melim b'torah. That you should be amal, that you should toil in Torah, that you should spend time learning Torah. So it would seem then that the tochacha, when we say, but if you don't go in the way of my chukos, if you turn the page from there, go to Pasuk Yudalid, this is the tochacha, v'im lo sishmuli, if you don't listen to me, v'lo sasus kol mitzvos eli, you don't do these mitzvos, v'im chukosai timasu, and now my chukos are made repugnant. You don't follow my chukos. So it seems to be the inverse. Like, the bracha comes if b'chukosai telechu, which Rashi says means if you learn Torah properly. And then, if you find learning Torah repugnant, so then all of these curses and the tochacha actually comes upon you. How do we square that away with what comes later? Namely, that it seems that it is specifically because of not keeping Shemitah, so that the land is like pining to get its Shemitos back and has to kick everybody out and bring all the enemies on in order to sort of make good on the Shemitos that it's owed. This is going to be the purview of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's piece here. So let's take a look. Perish Rashi Vizel Hashono. Here's what Rashi says on the Pasuk that we read about, that then finally the land will be able to get its Shemitos back. Lefayes kas hamakom. Why does the tochacha happen? It's in order to appease the wrath of Hashem. Shakas al shmitoseha, that he became angry because nobody was keeping Shemitah. V'chem lahalan, and then later on, we have a very, very similar idea. The ha'aretz ta'azov mehem, v'taretz es shabbososeha, that the land is going to be left bereft of you, abandoned of all of the Jews, no longer will you be on the land, and then it will be able to be appeased for all of these Shabbosos. V'lechora, it would seem though, Shvius man dechashmei, whoever mentioned anything about Shvius, where did this whole idea, how does Shvius suddenly insert itself in this whole conversation about the tochacha? V'ha'anan biv'im lo sishma'u airi. I thought we were talking about if you don't listen to the mitzvos in general, or if you don't specifically learn Torah, that's why the tochacha comes about. It's the inverse, the opposite of im b'chukosai telechu. If you go in my chukos, and if you learn Torah and do the mitzvos, then good things happen. And then if not, then we have the tochacha. The Perish Rashi, B'pasuk Gimel, Yachol Zekiyam HaMitzvos, you would have thought im b'chukosai telechu, this is the Rashi we just saw, refers to fulfilling all the mitzvos, Hamani, Makayim, im b'chukosai telechu. Now, what do I really make of im b'chukosai telechu, since we also speak about observance of mitzvos, b'chukosai telechu must refer to something else. What it means is, Shetiyu amelam b'Torah, that you toil in Torah, that you learn Torah. Vayin Sham. So he says, V'im Kain, if that be the case, Ma Zeh Shehizkir Poes in HaShmita, where'd Shmita come from? You want to tell me that the tochacha comes about because you don't keep any of the mitzvos, fine. The tochacha comes about because you're not serious enough and earnest enough in your Torah learning, fine. Where does Shemitah come from? Gam tamu, and it's also strange, mashahevi Rashi lahalon, that which Rashi brings later on, Shekla Yisrael, lo shamru es hashmita kol yimei heosam be'eretz Yisrael. Rashi later on says, whole calculation, says it would seem that the Jewish people never properly observed Shemitah from the time that they first came into Eretz Yisrael and then the time that they left. That's why they're kicked out, and that's why Gullus and the Tochacha and everything takes as long as it does. It's in order to sort of pay back measure for measure all of the owed Shemitahs, because they never kept Shemitah. V'zed davar she'eno mistavar klal. That's like impossible to believe, says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. How could that be?
The first generation that comes in the generation of David HaMelech and the generation of Shlomo HaMelech, of Yoshua, of Chizkiyahu, that they, Klal Yisrael had some low points, but in certain generations, that they weren't keeping Shemitah at all, how could that be? So here's his answer. Lefikach Nirali, therefore it seems to me as follows. The Ha'inyan Maschil Miseder, where does this whole idea, where does the topic really begin? What's chapter one? It all goes back to Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe, Behar Sinai, back to the beginning of Parshas Behar, Ad Sof HaParsha, all the way to the end of the Parsha. Shel Eila HaChukim VaHamishpatim Behar Sinai Biad Moshe. All the way until much, much later on, he quotes Perek Chafav Pasuk Samachavav. V'hainu, Sheheskila HaTorah B'mitzvah Shvius V'yovel. Meaning, here's what's going on. Let's look at the full breadth of these psukim. At the very beginning, we introduce you to the concept of Shemitah and Yovel. 7th year, 50th year. V'nezgago mizeh din ona'a, shelofi rov hashanim tirbe miknaso, ofi ma'at hashanim tam it miknaso. So, we're speaking about other items and issues of pricing and fair pricing, all with respect to, or all related to, issues of agriculture and crop and yield and the business that then stems from it and flows from it. Din geulas karkos. Then we speak about the idea of redeeming karkov, being able to buy back land that's part of my ancestral plot, mishum hayovel, because of yovel again. V'chein memkar bayis hatalui biyovel, and also the idea of buying homes, different kinds of pieces of real estate in Eretz Yisrael, all that have to do and interact with the concept of yovel, what goes free, what reverts back to the original owner at the yovel. Then we speak about avadim who also again go free at Yovel. All these things related to the whole concept of Shemitah and Yovel. Nikol Shekei Lafia Ibn Ezra, Dikra, the Eshab Sosaitish Maru, Koya Shemitah of Yovel. All the more so when we see, according to the Ibn Ezra, says that the Pasuk that ostensibly speaks about real Shabbos doesn't really speak about Shabbos. It actually still is a reference to Shemitah. So basically, Rav Yaakov's point is that the whole Parsha's Behar, all deals with Yovel, Shemitah, somehow or another, no break whatsoever, and then we land right at Parshas Bechukosai. So we pick up immediately after having dealt with all the various halachos that deal with Shemitah and Yovel. So Gam Parshas Im Bechukosai Telechu Ka'ei Asheves DeShemitah. That what Bechukosai really picks up on is the idea of not being at rest during Shemitah. Shekol Yisrael Hayu osa shana amelim batora. Rav Yaakov effectively is asking, what's everybody doing during Shemitah? What does it mean to really have Shemitah? What it means is that if you're not out at work, so then everybody's like filling in the batei medrash, right? The farmhands aren't out in the field, and the farmers themselves aren't out in the field. So that means that everybody now is sort of freed up to be able to avail themselves of the opportunity to actually study Torah day and night for that entire year, that entire 7th year. Shekol Yisrael hayu osa shana melem b'torah v'im lo tishma'u li, therefore, if you don't listen to me, I demand that you have a Shemitah. I demand effectively what Hashem is saying. This is the idea of, I noted before the idea of like a rabbinic sabbatical. Rav Yaakov is saying, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, everybody should have that. The idea of a sabbatical means that you leave your job for the sake of like a Torah pursuit, for the sake of like going to yeshiva. You become a kol guy for a year. That's the idea. So what do we mean then when we say, but if you don't listen to my commandments and if you don't listen to the mitzvahs that we've just spoken about, meaning to say, if you don't listen to what Shemitah is really supposed to be, v'imlo tishma'uli haynu shelo yihu amelim b'torah. You cannot disconnect, you cannot separate Im b'chukosai teleichu from Shemitah. They're one and the same. The purpose of Shemitah is to be able to get everybody back to learning, to be able to spend that year, the 1 out of 7, engaged in Torah study. V'zeh nikra eino shomer shvius. When we speak about somebody who doesn't keep shvius, that's what we're talking about. You may leave the land laying fallow, and you may not pick the produce, and you may not plow the field, and you may not work the field, and you may not water or prune or seed or whatever, but that's not being shomer shvius
any more than when you sit at home on your couch eating a bag of potato chips, watching the game on the TV that was already left on from Friday afternoon, is Shabbos. It's not Shabbos. What do you mean it's not Shabbos? I wasn't Mechal. I'm not saying you're a Mechal Shabbos. But that's not Shabbos. And even if you can't quite put your finger on it, we know what Shabbos looks like, we know what Shabbos feels like, and we know the kinds of interrupt. We know the wavelengths of Ben Adam L'Makom and Ben Adam L'Chaver and Ben Adam L'Atzmo that are supposed to exist on Shabbos. The idea is that Shemitah has a certain feel to it. When we speak about somebody who's not Shomer Shvius, we mean somebody who is just using the year begins and ends without any, let's say, accomplishment in a return to learning. Shekshem Shekol Shabbosos Hashana Nitnu Li Yisrael. That just as all of the Shabbosos of the rest of the year are given to Klal Yisrael, why? Kadeshis Asku Behem B'Torah. That we have the opportunity to. It's very difficult to learn during the week. It's very, very hard. We're working. We're busy. A lot going on. Shabbos, we have an opportunity. You go to a shir. You sit down. You have something to learn. Something to read. Kamo Kein Nitna Shabbos Haaretz Kadesh Shekol Yisrael Yasku B'Torah Ba'os Hashana. Imagine what that must have looked like, right, in its ideal form. And really the point he's making is that we never actually had that look, unfortunately. That when we say that Shemitah was never kept properly, meaning there's supposed to be this incredible year where nobody's working, where everybody is off, and Bate Medrash and shuls and yeshivas, kolalim are just full, everybody's learning. Uvisof os hashana b'chag ha-sukos, haisa mitzvas hakel. And then what happens all the way at the end? At Chag HaSukkos, you have Hakel, you gather everybody together to read Sefer Devarim. V'imlo, amalo b'Torah, b'meshach Shnas HaShvius. But if they weren't spending their time learning all during Shnas HaShvius, harihem mevatlim shvisas shvius. Then that's what we mean, that you actually are mevatel, or that you've nullified, that you haven't fulfilled, you haven't done it properly, you haven't really kept Shemitah the way it's supposed to be kept. V'zeo ma'ashakos avrashi, shloshomer es HaShemitah, koy meheyos in Be'aret Yisrael. It's not that they didn't keep the letter of the law. It's that they missed the point. Missed the broader point. It's like, again, it's like everybody keeping Shabbos by staying home and watching TV. Were you Mechal? You weren't Mechal Shabbos. But, like, come on. That's not what Shabbos is supposed to be. So the idea is that, unfortunately, they just missed the point. I think it's fascinating. It's an absolute fascinating approach to just answering some of these, again, very, very technical, likely things that until, like Rav Yaakov mentioned them, wouldn't even necessarily have thought of. But a great resolution to many of those textual issues that arise, that emerge from the Pesukim here, and also makes this sort of seamless connection between Parshas Bahar and Parshas Bechukosai, and adds this whole other very interesting dimension of what Shemitah is supposed to be. That Shemitah is very much supposed to be Shabbos. The same way we speak about Shabbos as being once every 7 days, Shemitah in a very, very similar capacity was meant to have that year-long feeling at least once every 7 years. Just as a final word here, and I want to kind of come back to thinking about Rav Zevin. You know, Rav Zevin sort of apologized for his interpretation of Avoda, almost. Because Avoda doesn't really, the way that he understood Avoda doesn't really fit the bill. When we speak about Torah, Avoda, Gemilas Chasadim, we don't really think about Avoda as actually work and actually an actual labor. We think of Avoda as being a spiritual Avoda, really Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash or davening. And he sort of goes out on a limb in order to try to explain how it is that, you know, Avoda kind of fits the bill of this Ben Adam La'atzmo. I would suggest that perhaps in Rav Zevin's view of things, that there is some value to suggesting that we might flip the two. That Torah isn't necessarily our means of serving Hashem. Torah actually is our means of serving ourselves. And I don't mean that in terms of self-interest and self-gratification, but what Torah effectively is, and that I mean the pursuit of actually learning Torah, I'm not talking about the fulfillment of all the actual mitzvos, but when Hashem gives us the Torah, Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebal Peh, effectively what he's doing is saying that this is the way that I think of things. This is the way that I view the world. These are my values, these are my positions, and they're not all, you know, touchy-feely in terms of not everything is like v'haftal re'echa kamocha, not everything is like kibbutz ha'eim, and not everything is tzar bali chayim, and it resonates in awe, that's how we become good people. But it's the idea of even mezuzah and tefillin and para aduma and kashrus. The dimension of learning is that this is Hashem's perspective. And when we study Torah, we're basically modeling, we're molding our own brains, our own thoughts, our own mental functioning to mimic and to copy that of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. We're actually changing ourselves to think more along the lines of and to be more aligned with Hashem's manner of thinking. We're actually changing ourselves when we learn Torah more than specifically serving Hashem. And perhaps that is a dimension of Bin Adam La'atmo, and that when we speak about Avoda, what we're really speaking about maybe is a combination of davening, of learning, of the kinds of things that we're meant to do. I was actually wondering if maybe in the scheme of Shemitah, so again, with Rav Yaakov's point is that how is it then that Shemitah relates directly to actually not just Bein Adam La'atzmo, but the Bein Adam La'atzmo of learning Torah? Rav Yaakov says it. That's exactly what we're supposed to be doing during Shemitah. We're supposed to be sort of reflecting, like, what's it all about? What are we doing? What's the point? What's the purpose? What are my own goals and my own aspirations? And we spend an entire year sort of trying to change ourselves into the kinds of people that we want to be for the next six. The idea of Avodah, as we think about Tefillah sort of standing in place of Avodah, Avodah primarily, fundamentally, is the idea of sacrifice when we think about Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Unfortunately, it's the kind of thing that not every Jew usually gets to interact with, at least all that much. Every now and again, you bring a karban, but overwhelmingly, it's the kohanim who day in, day out, are engaged in the enterprise of sacrifice, of being involved in the process of sacrifice. Maybe Shemitah is one very, very long exercise in sacrifice. Rav Zevin makes the point that we are not just sacrificing it up to Hashem, but that we're actually utilizing those peros to help sort of like pay it forward and take care of everybody else around us. But what it means is that which just yesterday I had every right to pick off and keep for myself, it's not mine anymore. Hashem says I have to give it up. I give it up. I give it up for Hashem. It doesn't belong to me. It's not mine. And maybe it's sort of this opportunity to turn ourselves not only into, you know, we're not only going back to yeshiva, but we're like turning ourselves into kohanim for the entire year. The entire year, every time like a deer comes, like an ibex, right, comes down from like the rocks in Ein Gedi and starts to nip at like my grass and then at my tomatoes and then at my cucumbers, and then it's a sacrifice. I'm basically seeing that as being offered up on the mizbeach directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and again touches on that wavelength of Ben Adam L'Makom. So I think Rav Zevin's framework is very, very interesting. I think maybe there's some value in also thinking about it, maybe as being able to swap out a couple of these different dimensions. But either way, the idea, whether Rav Zevin's approach or sort of like a hybrid approach incorporating Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's idea about taking the year to go back to yeshiva, the idea is a very, very compelling one. Thinking about Shemitah is this very, very special mitzvah whereby we're able to engage in every single wavelength of avoda, ben adam l'makom, ben adam l'chaver, ben adam l'atzmo, and I think even more broadly to think about how perhaps that applies to other areas and other dimensions of Torah, mitzvos, avodas Hashem. Thoughts?
Is this the only mitzvah that has all three dimensions?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so. But I do think it's more difficult with other mitzvos. Is it the only one? If it's not entirely unique, then it's pretty unique. Could you make an argument that maybe, I don't know, maybe every Shabbos has those elements, maybe? Shemitah perhaps even more. I'm sure, you know, if you really like dug down and, you know, or if you're like, you know, kicking back and looking up at the stars, you could probably imagine how, you know, other mitzvahs also incorporate some of these dimensions. But it's not so easy. It's not so easy. Part of what's very interesting then about Shemitah, sort of bringing it back full circle to Rashi, is that Diktu Keha, Prato Seha, that it has sort of like all of these different dimensions and all these other components. Shemitah is it's like an all-encompassing mitzvah, right? It's not just something you don't just do Shemitah. Ideally, you don't like do Shabbos either, but it's just, it envelops you. Shemitah isn't something you do, it's something you live. Right? You don't do Shemitah any more than like you don't do Pesach. You can do Rosh Hashanah, right? You can. We obviously shouldn't just shoot for like doing any mitzvah. We should be engaged and fully
fully involved and enveloped in the embrace of the mitzvah. Beautiful, fantastic. But Shemitah, you, you can't run away from that. I mean, it's everywhere. It's every dimension of your life. It's totally topsy-turvy. Your work life, your personal life, your spiritual life, your bottom line and your bank account and what you do with yourself and your hobbies and your recreation, family, everything is totally overturned. So it does become one of those mitzvos that sort of gives you an opportunity to see just because of its breadth, just how vast it is and how many different wavelengths it really can touch upon. If there are others that you can think of, I'd be more than happy to hear. Maybe there are others, but Shemitah certainly is a very, very special one.
It's interesting.